something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Welcome to J.Ill, a production of iHeartRadio. Yeah.
What's up, everybody? How y'all doing? Welcome to J.Ill the Podcast. It is a pleasure to be here today with my sister friends, Aja Great and Danzla.
That's me.
That's right. And my homegirl, Laia St. Clair.
What up, though?
Nah, you see how I said that?
Mm-hmm.
It's very Philly, Jill. It's giving North. It's giving North.
It's slightly like country, too. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like Philly and country mixed together because that's where I'm living at. Like, as soon as I get home, you know, it's
you be like,
where y'all going at? Yeah.
Exactly.
Everywhere you go, everywhere is no secret. We beautiful brown people, we got a whole dialect going on.
Oh, listen. What up,
everywhere.
Joe?
An entire
listen.
Way.
Listen. An entire what up, way of what being. Up, Joe?
All right. All yep. DC all day.
Mm-hmm. All day.
DC.
Yeah, I used to have a cousin who dated a guy from Cali, and he was like, why people from DC sing everything they say? And we were like, no, we don't. He was like, yes, y'all do. He said,
no,
y'all go, how y'all doing?
What you doing?
What y'all doing? Where's it going? What's up?
Where y'all going?
I just want to give a shout out to my girlfriend, Ashaki Coleman. She's a doctorate, and she's a whole principal at a school. And when I first heard her speak, she's from DC, and she was like, hey, I don't even know why y'all always going over there. And I was like, what? What?
But see, the funny thing is that what DC people will do is not drop their accent, for real.
I've just been
in Philly a long time. Don't get it twisted.
Me too.
But as soon as I cross the city limits, it's a wrap.
It comes back.
It's an absolute wrap.
Yeah. To our pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Look, we're going to get it to a little perfection right now. My mother says perfect. Oh, that's just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. My stepmother used to say crown for crayon.
Oh, crown.
Crown.
And that makes sense.
And orange.
Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Orange.
Mm-hmm.
My mother says stomach.
Mm-hmm. We love it.
Yes.
And my friend Scott Parker, his mom says stomach too. Mm-hmm. I figured they might be from the same place.
My grandmama said, if it's two O's, it's a ut. No matter what, it's a always root. A ut. So it's a root. It's a book. It's a root. It's what that's what it is.
But what's a book?
It's a root.
A book is a book.
Root is the only one that does that. I don't think there are any other words. I don't know if it's any other words with ooh.
I'm going to follow these rules, is what the hell I'm going to do.
Listen, we are absolutely fascinating when it comes to how we speak and the mm-hmm. ways that we speak. And it's true. There's music pretty much in everything. No matter where you come from, there's a song in how we speak. Yeah.
Yeah. Midwest. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Amen.
Yes. Yes. Amen. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Age of Great Dancer, we have somebody really special here. Would you be kind enough to introduce?
I most certainly would like to introduce this person, this lovely being. Y'all know I be on the internet. This is if you've been listening,
you
know.
That's where she be at, y'all.
That's where she be on the social medias, okay? And one day I'm on the social medias and this lovely person, the Sun Show, pops up on my feed talking this good talk, okay? Hmm. So before we get talking to him, I'm going to read a little bit about him so y'all understand. So when y'all do your good Googling, because this is what we do on this show. We do a good
Google.
Get
them the receipt, child. That's what they need.
Exactly.
That's what they
need. So here we go. I'm going to read this. I'm going to let y'all know I'm reading because I'm not this good. I'm reading to make sure y'all get the info right.
Yes.
All right. Sun Michelle has cultivated a strong following online, which is true. I'm one of his followers, via social media with frequent viral content ranging from pop culture commentary, allegorical anecdotes, and entertainment to serious discussions, advocacy, and philanthropy via crowdfunding. He uses this content to promote intellect, ethics, enlightenment, and education, the latter of which led him in 2017 to becoming the first and only Gullah language instructor at Harvard University. In this role, he teaches a curriculum based on extensive research and his own personal Gullah Geechee knowledge and experience. So I'm going to stop there because y'all need to understand. I know some of y'all need this, you know, mm-hmm. high level receipts.
They're but like, I need you okay, to
know,
Harvard.
I didn't
okay.
know until recently that this man taught at Harvard. All I know is that he speaks the absolute truth. And mm-hmm. so I would love to introduce the J.Ill family who is listening to Mr. Sun Michelle. Come on, Michelle. I like
welcome
that
to the show.
Very glad to be here. I appreciate the energy, the vibe. I'm really happy that you know you found me through the work.
It's
anytime I get love from online is great because everybody don't love you online. So
come on.
How can we not? Yeah. How can we not?
Well, we do know you get a little bit of pushback from the whites.
Oh yeah. But I'm going to be really honest about that. I expect it and to some degree thrive on it. Like they haven't figured out how to deal with creators who don't mind, as the old saying, the smell of napalm in the morning. Like I'm here for it. Mm. And so what they want you to do is to like back off and block them and all, but that's not how the internet works. That's not how social media works. Engagement is engagement. So the algorithm doesn't know that you're calling me out my name or whatever your problem is. All the algorithm knows is you keep coming to my videos, watching them and commenting. And so they've ironically been boosting the very content that they're trying to stop me from making, but it's not working out that way. You know,
why?
Unfortunately for us.
Would anybody want to stop your content though? Am I missing
it's
something?
It's educational.
You know what it is? I just did a lecture on campus last night, actually talking a little bit about this. One of the first things that colonialists do, the first thing that imperialists will do when they take over a place or conquer a people is get rid of the language. Like you would have to ask yourself, like, what's so important about getting rid of the language? Like if you go to Hawaii and you get rid of their native language, everywhere you go, you try to strip the people of their language because there's power in language. There's power in there's lineage in language, there's heritage in language. You can tell so much. And like you were just saying before we started recording, like you can tell from certain words, I could tell where you're from, what part of town you're from. If you say hello, maybe you're from Oakland. If you say not mean, or depending on it, you know, word is born, like maybe you're from Northeast. You know, I can kind of tell basically where you are. And when you take away those things and replace it with the language of the oppressor, you will never, ever be able to articulate your humanity to its fullest extent in the language of your oppressor. And they know that. Mm. And so when someone pops up who's saying, hey, there's not only nothing wrong with the way that we speak and getting into our dialects and our Creoles, but there's everything right about it. And making ourselves more adjacent to the truth of who we are as opposed to what we were forced to be, they don't like it. Mm. But they got to deal with it because to some degree, I know maybe it's a little masochist in me. I don't mind them being upset at all. It doesn't bother me at all.
You always seem to giggle a little right before you do like a clap back. You always seem, you know, like at the beginning of the clap back from where I think it's Jadakiss, and he's like, I don't want to sound mad. I feel wonderful. Like, you're like that at the beginning of your clap back. It's like, I want to make sure y'all realize I'm not pissed. In fact,
absolutely. Absolutely. They will think about it. Somebody who's teaching language, why is a person who's teaching language and dialect getting death threats? What is that about? Like, why are you in comments? In the comments, the one in the video that I just did, because I got 150,000, past 150,000 followers on YouTube, which thanks in part to them. You helped to drive me to 150,000, you know, followers on YouTube. So congratulations, congratulate yourself and please yourself. But they, at the same time, will say, I'm hunting you, and when I find you, I'm going to finish you. First of all, do you really want to find me? So if I'm anti-racism, anti-misogyny, pro-children, protecting children, building community, philanthropy, knowledge of self in regards of language and culture, like stop me when I get to the part that warrants you wanting to kill me. But here we are.
And here we are.
More real talk after the break.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It truly sounds like that corny saying, knowledge is power. And if it sounds like people see that to be true, and you're deeply powerful in the things that you're saying to people and empowering people, that's powerful. So,
but let me let you in on something though. Do you know what some of the most volatile, okay, there are three most volatile topics that I'm guaranteed to get hate from, and from surprising sources, okay? One of the ones that I did recently, I never turn off the comments in my posts, never do. I let the engagement rack up and they can just do whatever they want to in the comments, like have at it. One of the ones that I did turn the comments off was a post, the literal title of the post is Lizzo is beautiful. That's the title of the post, is Lizzo is beautiful. There were people who were stumbling over themselves to get into that post to say some of the most vile and ugly things about big, beautiful Black women. And they weren't all white. In fact, I would give it a 50-50 split between the racist and Black men who came in there to say it wasn't enough they were singling out Lizzo. They then started attacking people in the comments. And see, I can't have that. Like, you can say what you want to about me, I'm here for it. But when it gets to a point where someone responds and says, you know, hey, I really appreciate this perspective because I've been on the other side of, you know, these types of critiques from Black men. So it's just really reassuring to hear something positive or change, you know, coming from a brother. You think that that would be, you know, pretty straightforward exchange. There's nothing there. There's nothing controversial or even the argument. And then here swoops in some buzzing. They got something to say about it and criticizes her.
I want to know, what do you think about that? Like, where do you think that derives from? You know, that self-hatred in a way.
I'll put it to you this way. The reason that I cut straight to that, I'll be honest about why I cut straight to that. Because the responsibility in regards to Black men and how we treat Black women. And I was not born of a Virgin Mary. Okay, so people will always, oh, well, you know, maybe I'm from a different type of background. I'm, you know, some reason, some angle as to why I might think this way, and it's just unrealistic. Nope, that's not the way it is. Okay, I started leaving home when I was a kid, was considered at one point an at-risk, you know, kid. Left home again when I was a teenager. Did all the things that teenagers do to survive and get through all of the mistakes. All of that, I did all of that. Been there, done that. And at the end of the day, I'm sitting here today planning my return trip home to a family that's one member short because her boyfriend shot and killed her and himself and left a 7-month-old child on a road that I grew up on, a dirt road that I grew up on, and walked past every day. My blood. But that's not it. When I tell a friend of mine about it, he says, man, you're not gonna believe this. My boy was just telling me about his niece with a dude who shot her and left 5 kids behind. Ooh. So imagine that. I'm telling my friend about something that grim, and he's like, right back at you, bro. My niece, my friend's niece too. They're not alone. Yeah. See, dudes think it's cute to say these little things online, these little incels or whatever whether they, you know, I don't do the whole, well, you're not getting women, so you just, because getting women ain't the standard of whether or not you can be a good person. So I don't even bother with that clapback. Whether you living in your mama's basement or not or whatever, I'm not getting into the classist part about how much money you got. That doesn't bother me, okay? It's just about finding your center, and me walking around all week long going about the business of, you know, just doing what I have to do and trying to figure out how to formulate the words to give condolence for something like that.
Yeah.
Face to face. But they think it's cute. You think it's funny to make these little degrading remarks, and I'm not even really sure what you think you have to prove, but I've been there. So you're not gonna tell me, well, Black women did me this way. Bro, Black women in my lifetime on earth have many times, ever since I was a little boy to a grown man, many times been on the receiving end of negative energy and abusive behavior with Black women, giving and receiving since I was a little boy. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to tell me that that gives you license to be a terrible human being. So no, I do not have sympathy for these people when they come to me to spill in my lap, to externalize that venom, you know, in my face to make themselves feel better because there's another way. I know there's another way. And so when I'm trying to show you another way, and the only way that you can find to feel better about yourself is to make someone else feel less than, well, see, we can't have that. Yeah. We can't have that. And so I take those lessons. I have gotten threats from, you know, brothers. I've gotten threats from racists. I've been called names because I advocate for children. And whenever corporal punishment comes up, everybody loses their mind. I've heard it all. But you know what? It's a beautiful, beautiful task to take on. And I love it.
And I hope that's in the minority of the feedback that you receive. I'm hoping. I know sometimes those voices can be the loudest.
Even did a video about this. I hate to reference my own work, but I even did a video about the good cop. There are too many good cops who you didn't hit the person in the head with the baton. Maybe you didn't pull the trigger, but you didn't do anything when the other person was doing it. And even if you disagreed, you told the lie. You kept your mouth shut, kept up the blue wall of silence. There's lots of ways that people who are not directly complicit contribute to the thing being perpetuated, and they feel like they are off the hook because they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And so there was recently a situation where I was in the parking lot coming out of the grocery store of a place where I normally shop. And someone who works there was in the parking lot just eating her lunch and on her break. And a guy comes and taps on the window. He's like, you know, pretty girl, like you shouldn't be eating alone, you know. And she's just like, oh, my God, like I just want to eat my lunch and, you know, not be bothered. She waves him off, not interested. He taps again, like, come on now, you're just trying to have some lunch and you'd be friendly, some friendly conversation or whatever. You know, when I say take you have a real lunch, and she's like, not interested. And so I rolled down my window, I'm over across from her. I rolled down, I said, hey, I'll take that lunch. I like lunch. I'll take that lunch. And he was like, nah, bro. Like, no. Like, almost like, nah, I don't roll like that. Like, no, but I thought you should have a friendly conversation. I like friendly conversation and lunch. Let's do it. Yeah. Nah, bro, not interested. And in that moment, he walks away, but she was not interested too. But you felt like it was all good, but it's just friendly conversation. How come you can't have a friendly conversation? We haven't friendly. I like lunch. I do like lunch. And if he'd have said, yeah, we'd have gone to lunch. I mean, Dutch at the very least, but we'd have gone to lunch.
I love the fact that you bring up this point that, you know, when you're bringing up and calling out anti-blackness and at the same time giving people tools and telling people, hey, I'm legitimizing all the black experience here from the way that we speak to the way that we do things and specifically and particularly around protecting black women. And we all know that whole protect black women thing has been going pretty rampant throughout the internet in the last, you know, few years, and that you're actually doing this, what it looks like to actually protect black women, but that the pushback that you tend to get or can get at times, and I won't speak to what tends to happen more or less, but that to see that you're getting certain kind of pushback and that's coming from black men is an important kind of thing to make note of. And as you talk about something like corporal punishment, where I'm sure plenty black mothers jumped into those comments too and had lots to say about that as well. Yeah. So I think it's a cool thing for us to legitimize ourselves, but to also pay attention to the ways in which we can kind of be our own, I don't want to say enemy, but adversary. You know what I'm saying? So that's powerful.
That also applies to language, because I know very many people, my normal accent sound like this when I talk. I from the Chatsu, this the way that my normal accent is when I talk into my family them. That's what you sound like. Now, there a whole bunch of people back home will say, "Oh, how you going, Jill Scott podcast and sound geeky like that, man? You got me too embarrassed."
Well, we know. Don't come out here speaking ghetto. Don't go out there talking ghetto or whatever. Jill starts out the whole podcast speaking in a way that looks down upon in a lot of ways. When we in a business meeting, Jill not gonna come in the business meeting like, hey, how y'all doing?
Yeah, you know.
And the truth of the matter is that if she wanted to, she should be able to. Mm-hmm. And that in that moment, that is a legitimate pushback. That's a legitimate revolutionary act to own right. and to use your chosen language no more than it would be if she walked into a room and decided to speak Spanish.
It's a level of freedom.
Right. And see, that's the thing.
That's what I feel like.
When you've gone through all of it ties together in regards of linguistic, you know, truthfulness. And there's a, you know, there's even linguicism, which is, you know, essentially racism manifested by way of language. So people will profile your tone, they'll profile your accent, they'll profile, you know, the way that you use. But my point to all of it was what we end up with is where you encapsulated it just now is what we end up when we're dealing with anti-whiteness and white supremacy, and we start talking in terms of pro ourselves. Like I approach it from a pro self perspective, as opposed to just defining myself by being against some other thing. But what you end up with is the more you circle back around and deal with your stuff internally, you start to root out some of the internalized anti-blackness.
Yeah.
You start to root out many of the things that people who had accents or have accents who've lost them because they were literally beaten at home to not use them because their family saw it as a liability, not an asset. Mm-hmm. And so some of them were literally, you know, disciplined in order to clean up their diction at home. And now when we sit around and we talk to them and everybody start talking like this, they feel like they have imposter syndrome because they've lost their accent. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad thing to see someone that you know is just as gullah geechee as you, but they feel fake when they use the accent we grew up using. Mm.
We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we even get into this, because on some, let's act on like on some real dummy stuff, not calling people dummies, but like a lot of people don't even understand the importance or what Geechee and Gullah means to language right. and to culture. So can you kind of break that down in a way that folks understand?
Probably the most easier form of making it make sense is if people think in terms of languages and dialects, like say, for example, English itself is a language that is originally a Germanic language, okay? But the English vocabulary is like one third French. There's and Latin, and there are other languages. What's left of the Germanic languages are like maybe 27% of the original vocabulary from the Germanic language, and so. But yet, it's still able to maintain its status as a Germanic language because of the basic grammar and the structure. Things like that. That's why it's able to maintain its identity as a Germanic language. Now, Black African Americans did not choose to forfeit our native languages. That obviously wasn't a choice that we made.
Word.
And we did not learn English in a classroom. No, and none of our ancestors had Rosetta Stone. No instructors or anything like that. We learned English by adopting the language, the culture, the everything that was needed to survive. Okay. So in doing that, we were picking up language from people who were not themselves, you know, scholars. We're talking about the lower rung European, Scots, Irish. And so and remember that detail, the lower rung sort of indentured Scots, Irish people. Okay. Cause that's going to be very important in about 2 minutes. And so we're taking into consideration the circumstances of how we're learning the language and why we're learning the language. And also that all of us didn't speak the same original languages. So we're learning not only how to speak with the other, the oppressors, we're also learning to speak to one another. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's almost never talked about.
Yes,
is that
sir.
We are learning not only to speak to the oppressor, but we also have to learn to speak to one another in a language that is neither one of us. And so to be able to, for our ancestors, to be able to do that, to be able to learn a new language under duress, learn a language to speak with one another under duress, maintain enough of our Africanness, and I'll use that as a broad term, Africanness in loan words and structure in the language to today still maintain many of the more African basic structure in how we modify verbs, verb tense in a sentence. Like say, for example, we've all heard somebody say, well, I'm going to tell you what, or I'm going to go to the store, or I'm going to be there in a minute. And the before the verb is very consistent because that denotes the present, it takes the place of the suffix ing. That denotes that there's a present action or near future action that is in progress. I am going to the store. I'm going to go to the store. You're doing that right now. Now, if I'm going to the store much later, I would probably say, I could go to the store. I could go there. Now, that go is your future. I to go to the store is I do as in I frequently go. That's your continuous. Okay. I go to the store is add as in past. That go never had to change in any of those sentences because the verb stays in its base infinitive form. That is consistent. Those are rules that happen consistently throughout the language. And so when you start looking at where else do these rules and these things happen, and you look into our mother tongues, then you start to find them. You start to find words like huna. It's also pronounced as uno or unu. In different parts of the diaspora, that same word una exists. Baba, for father, exists in different parts of the diaspora. You know, these consistencies happen throughout the diaspora. And yet, even though we're maintaining very much of the African sort of fundamentals of the language, we're still relegated to it being a dialect of English and stripped of the African identity and made it seem as though it's just basically a broken version of an English thing. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Meanwhile, these same people are picking up language from us. They're picking up words from us. Guba is the Gullah Geechee word for peanut. Georgia is the Goober state, G-O-O-B-E-R. But ours is G-U-B-A. We do not use the hard E-R in more words than one. We don't use the hard E-R because our language is non-rhotic. And non-rhotic is essentially when you drop the hard R for more of an A-like sound. So Guba and Goober are the same thing, word for peanut. Georgia is a peanut state. Georgia is also a state that is in bordering the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor. So to make it seem like it's a coincidence that the language seems to follow us wherever we are, and these people end up speaking our language and using phrases that we use, it's only ever credited in one direction. They literally believe mm-hmm. that we learn language from one another, but it was only Africans learning language from English mm-hmm. and not English learning any language from African. But how does that stand to reason?
No.
You see what I'm saying?
It's still everything else but the language? I doubt it.
Well, getting to the Scots-Irish, like there are things now, like the word axe, that is known as something that people look down on for Black people. If we say, and let me ask you a question, you know, an axe. Okay, well, mm-hmm. there's a couple things about that. You also will find axe in Europe. You'll find axe in Ireland. You'll still find axe in different parts of Scotland. You'll find axe in Chaucer, in Shakespeare, and going back to the Greek word axion and askion. Those two words, askion and axion, are literally the same thing, same words, and it means essentially to request. And that is abbreviated from axion to axe. And so when people correct ax with ask, not only is that to a certain degree incorrect, but it also is ironic in a sense that that word is not even the original word that you were trying to say. The word that you're trying to say isn't even the original word for that. And so but I'll tell you how it happened. How it happened is the word ask was more widely publicized in print, particularly in the Bible. And at the time, only people of status could either read or own books. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the word that was more widely spread out or widely distributed was in books. And so people who did read and people who did have status and people who did have education, they read ASK. And so when they repeated that word, they said ASK. The people who did not have those things were still saying AKS. And so then they're like, I happen to notice broke people saying AKS. And so the social correlation between lack of money, lack of education, lack of status, and also associating those things with Black people turned into who was at the lowest rung of society, who was the brokest, who was the least educated, who was the one that, you know, that were the poorest in all of those aspects that lack status, Black people. And so we basically got axe pinned on us, even though we got it from Europeans. And who still use it today? Do you see what I'm saying?
Come on. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. This is the point. This I got to stop you because this is the point where we all get up and run around the room. This is the part where we get up and we run. We run to a corner and we shout for a few minutes.
We run. I get sad a little bit though, too, though, because you know what, though, son? I get sad. I was just saying to Asia and Jill, I was like, a class like yours, knowledge like this should be fundamental in every school that has a Black or brown. Every school, not even the Black or brown, because I feel like the immigrants and everybody else who comes here don't understand this, don't get, like, you need to get all of this. Like, this is the country this is the country that you live in. And I'm just sad because I'm like, man, if people had this information, the empowerment that you would feel, like, you wouldn't question yourself so much.
Let's also talk about how we wield the grammar police, how the grammar police wields this power on that.
We don't know no better.
We do this to one another.
But
there's something about it, even not knowing the details, that feels wrong. There's something about it, because even we can even pull up respectability of all types. Like, you will see on the socials, don't you remember a time when we used to do this and we used to do that? And these were times when it was acceptable to jack up little Black kids and make them wear certain clothes and make them say certain words and make them act a certain way when they are in the presence of white folk.
But we didn't didn't, they don't know that they don't know, they don't know.
Right.
There was training for that. You remember?
Right.
You know, there was training for any artist. You had to go through media training to learn how to speak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a certain etiquette that you had to carry. You know, thinking back to like the Supremes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
what we're seeing today is is far different from what, you know, they were portraying. Now, in the house, they were a whole other people.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I don't, you know, I can't say
I don't blame them for it, though.
I'm assuming, you know, like when we think of artists like Whitney Houston, you know, holding yourself in, you know, for so long.
Right.
Yeah.
Tends, the bowel tends to break. You feel me?
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a lot of evidence of what happens when you have to consistently suppress the self in language and in behavior and everything. When you talked about how there's a borrowing from us that happens, and then it immediately becomes like American culture.
Well, you know, we don't get credit. Like, we just don't get credit.
Right. Tank said once, the singer Tank said how he was talking about how if he sang Stay, if he sang the same song, it would be considered gospel and relegated to a specific type of genre, time of day. It would just be seen differently. But if a non-black singer, if a white singer sings it, then it's spiritual. It's a different kind of vibe. Like, they get to experiment with it in a way that sometimes, and I don't know if this is true, and you certainly would be in a more informed perspective to speak on it, but sometimes it seems like with black artists, black intellectuals, black public figures, we have to manage our blackness. Like, it's not even just like walk out the door and just be black.
Oh, Jill didn't have to.
We have to figure out how black in each situation do we really want to be. And I'm just wondering, like, I just don't see that being an issue for our white counterparts. I don't see it being something that they have to say, like, how white can I be right now? Unless you're racist, and that's a whole different conversation. But, you know.
Doing the whole how black can I be. You know, was it called black fishing or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
There's quite a lot of that. But, you know, there's like Nat King Cole. You know, he was considered quite eloquent. Maya Angelou was considered quite eloquent. Felicia Rashad is considered quite eloquent. There was something for me about specifically, I loved the diction. Diction was exciting to me. I wanted that for myself. When I read James Baldwin, he was very eloquent and very thoughtful, but also exceptionally black ass.
Which was
incredible. But then you have Zora Neale Hurston, and you've got Toni Morrison and J. California Cooper, who could sit themselves in the belly of a community and sound like the people. And when you read it, you heard, and you could smell and taste, you know, the community. Is there something wrong with people who enjoy diction?
You know, it's funny you should ask that, because two things tied together, something that you just said and also a minute ago when we were talking about why isn't the course in more schools? Mm-hmm. Ironically, Maya Angelou, along with Jesse Jackson and a few of the community leaders, when there was an initiative in the 1980s to have what they called Ebonics. Yeah, but they then called Ebonics, but having black speech and black English integrated into the curriculum in order to help black children better understand other subjects, but mostly English, like using it as a bridge. And it was the community who not only shut it down, but demonize it to the point where people became embarrassed and ashamed of just the term Ebonics.
Well, they needed better PR, son. The PR on Ebonics wasn't like your linguistics. It wasn't like this is the history.
That's likely because, and this is just the facts, that in certain spaces, the fact that son is a teacher, as an instructor at Harvard, the fact that he's associated with a PWI, and this is something he's teaching in that space, will legitimize it in ways that it wouldn't have been legitimized before.
You're saying that you don't think people like that were involved in Ebonics?
many of the issues with the Ebonics controversy was most of the criticism wasn't coming from linguists. It was more activists,
right.
People who weren't really on. Yeah, there wasn't a thing there, cohesive, coming together, people sitting down. Well, I mean, again, Jesse Jackson called it trash. He said that like black speech is trash. He literally used the term trash for the way that we speak. And these are the people who are seen as mostly of the articulate people. They absolutely associated black speech with, being with negativity. There was a Sesame Street character that they tried to integrate Sesame Street and integrate some of black speech in it. And again, we got it shut down. And this has happened multiple times where the respectable folk in our community shut down efforts to incorporate our manner of speech as an outreach for children in schools. And so people would ask me, sometimes not so, in a gotcha type of way, they would say, well, why are you at Harvard and not insert black university here? Harvard called me.
Right.
I'm just going to say, I had the privilege of teaching one class at Harvard, and I felt like I was at the Hogwarts of education.
You're supposed to. That's what they pay for.
I was like, they were brilliant.
You would feel like that at Spelman too.
Nice.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, I rolled out the invitation. I said that while I am teaching at Harvard, I would be more than happy to workshop, to parlay, to you know, if you're at a school, and some people have taken me up on it. I mean, if you want me to give you any kind of insights on teaching the language, anything, holler at me.
So son. Nobody, no school or institution has reached out to you.
Right now, we're going to call it out. Morehouse, Howard, Spelman, where y'all at? North Carolina A&T, Florida A&M.
And school.
Where y'all at?
And not just colleges, but school systems. I'm like, the school system in, where the fuck is Harvard? Wherever that at?
Oh, no. Surprisingly, Harvard has a program called Project Teach. In that program, there's an outreach for Cambridge area schools.
Okay.
And so what I would end up teaching, say, seventh graders in Cambridge area schools, and that would be school for students who speak English as a second language, students from public schools. So I do that in Cambridge. In Cambridge.
I see.
And so speaking, collaborating with other programs. Oh, I have worked with other schools. Princeton.
Listen.
Come on.
I'm about to get mad. I'm getting mad.
More conversation after the break.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can I ask a question? I have a question. Mm-hmm. All right. What? So on the good people's social medias, you know, a lot of times we have situations where, and I've seen this on Twitter, where Black folks getting upset sometimes with us explaining how to interpret certain Black expressions or ways of saying things. Feeling as if we're giving away these trade secrets, this moment where we can kind of secretly talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about the gatekeeping of our language?
I want you to imagine this. Okay. One of the most common influences that people point to as an exceptional sort of thing that can help you improve as a singer is like having a church background. That's what we in our community is always having a church background. Mm. Okay. Jill, when you're doing your concerts, do you count how many white people are in the audience possibly learning the runs that you're singing?
I don't remember. No,
yeah. When you're singing your vocals, yeah, they're listening to you sing your vocals. They're listening to the bass players play bass. They're listening to the drummers play the drums. They're listening to the teachers teach.
Yeah.
They're omnipresent. We live in a white power structure, and they're just going to be white people everywhere and watching and observing. And you have to figure out, how do I give my gift or share this gift with my community to the broadest in the broadest manner possible and not expose it to anyone else, when the most expansive way for me to do that is in person, in public, on the internet. There's just no way to get around that. And as of now, if you look at who's going viral in these social media posts, when you just know when the drum major, okay, goes viral for doing the dance that every black drum major and their mama know how to do, they're white. You know when somebody covers, there'll be people who will cover a black artist's song, and the cover does better than the original. Because a white person covered it. There are more, it used to be unique to be like the blue-eyed soul singer. Like that used to be like a thing, that people thought was unique. But now how many people can you count now that are not black, whether be they Korean or white or some other, who can do these runs? Who hold these notes? Because they're watching us perform our craft. They're watching, learning, playing it, replay, play, replay, play, replay, and practicing in the mirror, being us when they grow up. And so there's no way that we can really circumvent them completely from the process. But what I do try to add is you can't really fake culture. Like you need cultural context for a thing to make sense. And I'll give you an example. Right now, a term that is a trendy sort of so-called internet slang term is cap. If somebody says, "Ah, that's cap," no cap, it's cap. Okay. The term cap has been, first of all, being used since the turn of the last century in the black community as hi-hat. So if you're wearing a top hat or a hi-hat and you tip your hi-hat, that's for sophisticated people. Mm-hmm. That's for the people who are, well-heeled. So if someone who wasn't from that background thought that you were being pretentious or thought that you were, fronting, they'd be like, look at this dude with hi-hat. This old hi-hat Negro here, like, you know, you're trying to hi-hat. Mm-hmm. And so from hi-hat, it became high cap. And from high cap, it was abbreviated to cap. And so these people are now saying that something is a general term, and in general internet speak, like it belongs to everyone. That's actually been in our family since our mama's mama was saying it. And same thing, if I say, like if we saw something that looked good or we wanted to compliment something, if I see your sneakers and something, I was like, man, them sneakers hard, bro. Those sneakers hard. They were saying that back in Cab Calloway's days. Like even in Cab Calloway's book of isms in his dictionary, hard is used in Cab Calloway's days the same manner. Now, these are our grandmother's, great-grandmother's times using words that have been in our community. We've been saying kiki. We've been saying it. We've been saying hip. We've been saying dig. We've been using cat.
Bro, God, they whiting the hell out of bro. I was like, bro, it's not.
Our words have been so immersed into popular language that it ain't even slang no more. Like people don't even look at it as slang.
No.
It's so normalized. So it puts us in a precarious, you know, situation because they don't hear this conversation right now. When this gets published.
Oh, we be trying to figure it out, but you so right. It's no safe space.
Yeah, everybody gonna hear.
As they should.
Right. And I have just one of my videos has 11 million views. And you have to ask yourself, wait a minute. If just one video gets 11 million views, and that doesn't include like all the other videos, what would you do if you could tell 11 million people something? Like if there was a thing that you could say and 11 million people were guaranteed to hear it, what would it be? But people don't know what's going to go viral in advance. So to me, I try to, if you stay ready, you only got to get ready. I try to make sure that when I open my mouth and say something in front of that camera and put it out into the world, that I'm okay with whatever it is going viral or whatever it is going wherever it needs to go. I'm comfortable pressing play in any room, anywhere that thing is found, because you never know where it's going to land. And I just can't. I can't be the one. What I'm gonna do? What I'm gonna do? They want me to.
I've felt similar ways. Yeah. I just had to ask you because I think we always find ourselves in these moments
where
we're like, oh gosh, they will steal. They will twist, turn, dilute. And all of the above, and there's always a inner conversation as to just not just how black am I going to be because of my level of internalized anti-blackness, but how black am I going to be? Am I going to allow you to have access to me, the one thing I feel like I can keep?
Well, think about it this way, in a sense, if you will, you carry yourself in a way that if somebody did copy you or they try to, you know, do what you do, it would be obvious that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you look silly trying to do me. Like everybody said, oh, man, you're just trying to do so-and-so. You're biting off this person, that person. Like they know what you're doing when you're doing it. And to me, like we set the bar of excellence at a place where it's one of those you can get with this or you can get with that, you know, type situations. And there's some things you can't do anything about. Like you can't do anything about them having the raw numbers. They just simply make up so much of the population that they decide to buy something mediocre. That's not an indictment of your product. Your product is excellent, but you know what? They wasn't here for the spices. Everybody can't do spice. For some people, salt and pepper is spicy. And they're not here for what you're doing. And that's okay. Because Frankie Beverly and Maze are legends in our community.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Brothers are legends to us. So there's plenty of people who are royalty to us that ain't never got a crossover. As far as, and so I go lie. Now when I see, you know, like Beyonce, you know, cover like one of, you know, Frankie Beverly and Maze's like song, I was like, oh man, please don't let him find out about me. Don't let them find out about Maze. Like, oh man, they're going to go to the catalog. They're going into the catalog now.
It's a lot of grandchildren. Let them get fed.
I get the feeling, but the thing is, I think that at some point in time, we pretty much have to, like, gatekeeping is not meant to keep us out. Like, when it gets to the point where we're cutting off our nose to spite their face, I think that we're taking the wrong turn.
Yeah.
There we go.
And so, don't come into a black educator's post and be like, nah, brother, you're giving away their secrets. Don't say that. Like, don't do that. Don't do that. Because they already made Uncle Remus. They already put out, Disney already had, Tom and Jerry already had, Thomas, you better get run. You know, they already got the stereotypical black mate. They already have the stereotypical black slave speak. That horse left the barn a long time ago. So we're not stopping them from hearing us speak when they're part of the reason we speak this way.
Mm.
So think about that. Like Creoles, especially particularly Creoles such as Jamaican Patois, you know, Bahamian Creole English, you know, Bajan Creole, Gullah. These are languages that came about by way of, that were born of colonialism, that were born of struggle and were merged with languages of the oppressor and holding on to the identity of our ancestors. And so they're not secrets. They're languages that came about because we had to be able to communicate with the oppressor. But we also stratified the languages to keep a little something for ourselves. And so I'll teach up to a limit, and the rest of it is reserved for what's in the room. If we're having this exact same conversation in the same room offline, it might be a little bit more colorful.
Okay.
This is, you know.
Okay.
We like
it.
We love to hear it.
Yeah.
We want to make sure to normalize it.
Yeah.
But still honor.
Because we need the information.
Things sacred. Something has to be sacred, amen?
Yes. Yes. And what are you not? Are you just going to not be all of yourself?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
What are we going to stop being ourselves because we don't want anybody to copy us?
Right.
Well, there's a thing that's naturally, I don't know very many people who are 100% the same in every single situation. So like naturally speaking, I might say something, even with my siblings, I might say something to one sibling that I wouldn't really say to another. Like we got different styles of conversation, different personality types.
Yes.
And so sometimes somebody asked me the other day, he said, well, if this is where your accent normally sounded, then how come you cord switch? You know, the way that it was phrased was essentially like you kowtow to the white man by switching. But what they haven't taken into consideration is, to me, my language is intimate. Like it's a personal thing. It's an intimate thing. But I was in LA, and it was a group of brothers that were all talking, and somebody let one of the words slip, and I was like, "Where you from?"
Right. I love those moments.
You got to be from Charleston. You from Charleston, low country. You got to be from somewhere. He's in Iowa, life from West Ashley. West Ashley is right next to in Charleston County. And I was like, yeah, like bro, I'm from Tucktown. He's like, you Tucktown? So we start talking. Then as soon as we start talking, this brother turned out to be Nigerian. This one here turned out to be all of us were standing. We're using our, I don't know, business accent. And we all just got into our dialect, got into our languages once it was clear what was up. But I've even had that happen in situations where there are people that I know were from the same background, and it's just different comfort levels, whether you're angry, whether you're in a good mood, like different things. We speak differently at different times. It's not selling out to use all of who you are, speak with all of who you are if you want to reach with an audience. There's sometimes when you might sing like there's the national anthem. Everybody got their own version of the national anthem. Maybe you just want to sing straight through and not do, you know, First Sunday. Yeah, I mean, maybe you don't want to do the revival. Like maybe that ain't the version you're going for. You just want to sing it straight down the line, and you should be able to do that. And so that's what I want to do. Is my goal isn't to get you to be blacker. My goal is to help you be as comfortable as possible being your authentic self, whatever you feel that is, however you want to express yourself, because you were you at the end of the day. I'm not as married to the concept of race as an identity as many people would think I am, because white supremacy is created. And so here's the cruel irony is that to some extent, even pride in the concept of blackness as an identity, to some degree, is affirming to the people who created race as an identity in the first place for purpose of putting us on the bottom rung of a fake socioeconomic caste system. And so to some extent, because you've stripped our identity, our original identity away from us and left us with this thing in return, we've had to get through all sorts of struggles and work our way, scratch our way from the bottom. And that was with us all along. That was a part of the thing that was with us all along. And so we are trauma bonding with an identity that was never meant to be our own. You see what I'm saying? And so now that separation is very, very, very difficult to do, because then we have to ask ourselves, well, then what am I if not that?
And that's what should be taught in school.
Right. I don't know that everyone has it.
Wait a minute. I need to do some care on my edges. Thank you very much. Let me go and get some
ointments. You got the wig pulled back a little?
Oh, I have some. I need to have ointments and salves. I need to go get my ointments and salves.
It has been a pleasure to hear your thinking out loud. It is a pleasure.
Thank you.
You carry yourself in an extremely powerful way. And we commend you absolutely for sharing what you know, for caring about what you know, and lifting others as you go. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you so much for being here with us at J.Ill. And we'd love to talk to you again. Fascinating.
Absolutely love to return anytime.
You're fascinating, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been J.Ill, the podcast. Such a pleasure, always such a pleasure to have conversations that spark conversation. The gumbo is good, my friends. The gumbo is good.
How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time.
Hey, listeners, it's Amber, the producer here. How amazing is Sun? I could literally listen to him all day. And I'm pretty sure we're going to have him on for many, many more conversations. In the meantime, check out all of his incredible content on social media, YouTube, and his website. I'll link all those elements down below. There is so much power in language. And if you take anything from this conversation, I hope that you remember not to let anyone invalidate your culture or the way that you and yours communicate with each other.
Hi, if you have comments on something we said in this episode, call 866 Hey Jill. If you want to add to this conversation, that's 866-439-5455. Don't forget to tell us your name and the episode you're referring to. You might just hear your message on a future episode.
Thank you for listening to Jill Scott Presents J.Ill, the podcast.
J.Ill is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.